You look good, girl. Some time was better than no time at all. Even 5 years or three was better than no time at all. She couldn't read, hadn't been to Morehouse, hadn't been to no house. But she could do that much math with no trouble. Three equals better than none. Even one equals better than none. Oh, but Mia thought of a blue-eyed boy stepping through a door, one that was found instead of lost. She thought of saying to him, "You look good, son." She began to weep. What have I done was a terrible question. What else could I have done was perhaps even worse. Oh, Discordia. 15. This was Susanna's one chance to do something. Now, while Mia stood at the foot of the steps leading up to her fate, Susanna reached into the pocket of her jeans and touched the turtle, the Shalpada, her brown fingers separated from Mia's white leg by only a thin layer of lining closed around it. She pulled it out and flipped it behind her, casting it into the gutter, from her hand into the lap of Ka. Then she was carried up the three steps to the double doors of the Dixie Pig. 16. It was very dim inside, and at first Mia could see nothing but murky, reddish-orange lights, electric flambeaux of the sort that still lit some of the rooms in Castle Discordia. Her sense of smell needed no adjusting, however, and even as a fresh labor pain clamped her tight, her stomach reacted to the smell of roasting pork and cried out to be fed. Her chap cried out to be fed. "That's not pork, Mia," Susanna said, and was ignored. As the doors were closed behind her, there was a man, or a man-like being, standing at each of them. She began to see better. She was at the head of a long, narrow dining room. White napery shone. On each table was a candle in an orange-tinted holder. They glowed like fox eyes. The floor here in the foyer was black marble, but beyond the maitre d's stand there was a rug of darkest crimson. Beside the stand was a sigh of about 60 with white hair combed back from a lean and rather predatory face. It was the face of an intelligent man, but his clothes, the blaring yellow sport coat, the red shirt, the black tie, were those of a used car salesman or a gambler who specializes in rooking small-town rubes. In the center of his forehead was a red hole about an inch across, as if he had been shot at close range. It swam with blood that never overflowed onto his pallid skin. At the tables in the dining room stood perhaps 50 men and half again as many women. Most of them were dressed in clothes as loud or louder than those of the white-haired gent. Big rings glared on fleshy fingers. Diamond eardrops sparked back orange light from the flambeaux. There were also some dressed in more sober attire. Jeans and plain white shirts seemed to be the costume of choice for this minority. These folken were pallid and watchful, their eyes seemingly all pupil. Around their bodies, swirling so faintly that they sometimes disappeared, were blue auras. To Mia, these pallid, aura-enclosed creatures looked quite a bit more human than the low men and women. They were vampires. She didn't have to observe the sharpened fangs which their smiles disclosed to know it, but still they looked more human than Sayre's bunch. Perhaps because they once had been human. The others, though, their faces are only masks, she observed with growing dismay. Beneath the ones the wolves wear lie the electric men, the robots. But what is beneath these? The dining room was breathlessly silent, but from somewhere nearby came the uninterrupted sounds of conversation, laughter, clinking glasses, and cutlery against china. There was a patter of liquid, wine or water, she supposed, and a louder outburst of laughter. A low man and a low woman, he in a tuxedo equipped with plaid lapels and a red velvet bow tie, she in a strapless silver lamé evening dress, both of startling obesity, turned to look with obvious displeasure toward the source of these sounds, which seemed to be coming from behind some sort of swaggy tapestry depicting knights and their ladies at sup.